Time will come to order. Is appropriations off the floor or something? Well, we'll just go ahead. Roll call.
Roll call for Tuesday, January 15th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Excuse. Are they? They're coming.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader. Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Nutting.
Here.
Perkins. Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Schiffer.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Flatern.
Here.
President Ross.
Here.
Bebout. Dockstader.
Here.
Perkins.
He's on his way. Excuse. Or is he coming? Who else?
That's it. 29 present,
one excused.
One excused.
Prayer by Pastor Whitmore.
As I understand, sometimes, God, the hours can be long, sometimes short. And I pray that today that they would not grow weary in doing good. God, we ask that you would be with their families, be with each of them in keeping good health, that they can stay a position to do, God, just what you have them to do. I pray that it would be a blessed day and they would know, God, that you have been superintending this time. We leave it all to you. Thank you, God. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, today, one of our newest members of the Senate happens to have a birthday today. I'd like to have everybody wish Senator Kraft a happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Bernie. Happy birthday to you.
Reading, correction, approval of the journal.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of January the 14th, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the journal committee report. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day is Dr. Robert Prentice from Cheyenne. There is no nurse for the day. Thought for the day comes from Mark Twain. Whenever you find yourself on the side of the majority, it is time to pause and reflect. Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Senate File 114, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 114, Assault of Health Care Providers, sponsored by Senator Nutting, and Act Relating to Crime and Offenses.
Senate File 114 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 115, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 115, Protective Services Investigation Amendments, sponsored by Senator Nutting, and Act Relating to Child and Adult Protective Services.
Senate File 115 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Senate File 112, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 112, Raw Milk, sponsored by Senator Hastert, and Act Relating to Food.
Senate File 112 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 113, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 113, Insurance Guarantee Association Act Amendment, sponsored by Senator Johnson, and Act Relating to Insurance.
Senate File 113 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 116, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 116, School Bus Driver Cell Phone Use, sponsored by Senator Johnson, and Act Relating to Operation of Motor Vehicles.
Senate File 116 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Reports from Standing Committee.
January the 14th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 78, Active Duty Medical Cost Reimbursement Program Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. January the 14th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 51, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Senator, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, you all received your Craig estimate yesterday and the goldenrod. And if you'd grab those, I'd like to just very briefly give you an update on where we are, what we got from the January Craig estimate, and how it reflects and crosses over into your goldenrod. And, Mr. President, I'll try to be brief on this and then answer any questions, but what the Craig estimate that they updated in January did for us is, and this is a summary of it, on the sales and use tax, it went down by $11 million, and this was because of new assumptions surrounding oil and gas-related employment and personal income. Severance tax went up $6.2 million, and federal mineral royalties went up $5.7 million. The primary reason for them going up was on the surface coal price forecast was increased by 50 cents a ton. However, on the gas side of the equation, we reduced the amount of production, and we also dropped the price that we're utilizing from $3.75 to $3.65 per MCF. And if you net those out, Mr. President, the effect to our bottom line is $900,000. And that's the net of effect of the Craig estimates in January as compared to the Craig estimate in October. Mr. President, if you take up your goldenrod now, and I'll just hit the real crux of it, if you look on the front page under Governor's Rec October Craig status, and go down to the what's called the budget bill broad transfer to the LSRA, you'll see $19.8 million. And if you recall the discussions we've had in the past and the amount of the October Craig estimate, after the governor's recommendations, which includes about $130 million in additional, some of it one time, and other spending and his proposed cuts and other things that have happened, he is presenting to us in his governor's recs that there is roughly $19.8 million on the table for this legislature to deal with. If you move over to the right, you'll see that 13-14 governor's rec with the January Craig status, and it goes up to $21.5 million. So that's a critical number that, based on the governor's recs and the most recently completed Craig status report that's quote, on the table, if you will. And that $21.5 million includes the $900,000 that I just mentioned to you as we net out sales tax, severance, and FMRs. There's an interesting thing that goes on with the university in the bonding side where Standard & Poor's has requested that they set aside $600,000, in fact, because of the rating system, and the university has agreed to deposit that in the state auditor's office so that we don't have to worry about the Standard & Poor's concerns. And that $600,000 goes off, and then the governor had a $100,000 reduction. So that's how you go from the $19.8 million that's, quote, on the table to the $21.5 million that's, quote, on the table. And then if you turn back to page 3, Mr. President, there's another significant thing that pops up there, and it's under the LSRA, in which you have, and if you recall, the governor's recs were to transfer the COLEs bonus money directly into the LSRA. That had not been profiled before. That has now profiled, and you'll see that if you look at the 2013 governor's recs. You see the number on the October status of $174 million. That now increases to $328. That's $75 million a year that comes into the state for the COLEs bonus money for 13-14. That also goes to 15, 16, and 17, and that's the number there that you see, the COLEs bonus money. And, of course, we all remember the COLEs bonus money goes to the school capital construction, and all you're seeing there is what the governor's recs are. The other thing, Mr. President, if you turn to the next page under the school foundation program, there's a couple of changes there that I think we ought to at least be aware of. And if you look at the estimated revenue up there on the top under the school foundation program, you see it goes from $1.676 million, increases $3.8 million to $1.679 million. Mr. President, that comes from the FMR and severance taxes that I mentioned earlier, and that's how they flow through the system the way they are earmarked. One of the things that you also have to see under appropriations, if you work your way down, I think it's in column 7, and you see school foundation program, you look under the October Craig, you see $86 million. You look under the January Craig, you see $71.4 million. That difference is we are short $14.6 million because of the increased enrollment. And that's where you see that. Of course, then if you look, you'll see another number, Mr. President, that is, the way it's set up under the school foundation program, we always have $100 million in there. If more money comes in, it goes to be transferred to school capital construction, and that number is transferred, if you'll see, the $76.6 million that's up there, and then that transfers down to the school capital construction account. Mr. President, that's a quick update of where we are. The critical thing, members of the Senate, I think it's understand that essentially the Craig report for January is flat. Let's do not forget that the October Craig report showed we had an increase of $90 million, and that's part of the money that's been on the table since the October Craig report. And if you go back to the October thing, you'll know that we had $150 million that was available to us going into this budget cycle. That $90 million that came as a result of the Craig report plus the governor's cuts that he's making of $60 million. That's $150 million. His programs and his recommendations reduces that to 19. Now that goes up to 21 million. So for this body right now, based on the governor's recs and the Craig report for January, there's 21 million on the table if we adopted all the governor's recs. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, in my understanding, on the figures we just looked at, the governor's recs figures, and I need to know if my assumption is right. I assume that in his numbers, he is counting on the diversion of the 1% that by statute is going to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, diverting that back in to the LSRA, I believe is where he wants to put it. That's question number one. I think that's contained in his numbers. Second question, in his numbers, is he including projected capital gains? He said he wanted to have a projection of those. We've never counted those before. Are they included in the numbers he's throwing out in his roadmap here?
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the first question on the 1% diversion, that's statutorily required now that goes into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. That 1% shows up on the profile sheet. And you'll see it when you look at the LSRA that's on page 3. And you look at the LSRA and you see the governor's rec of the 1% diversion that goes into that LSRA. Now, my colleague from KC, that is not included in his governor's recs for the spending of this budget. This is a separate item to divert the 1% severance tax into the LSRA. So the number that I spoke about out of the $150 million, his $130 million that he's recommended, this is not in there. But, however, his recommendations do include a diversion of the 1% that goes to the permanent fund to the LSRA. I hope I made that clear. And to your second question about the projected capital gains, he has requested that, I believe it's $80.8 million be spent of the unprofiled, but maybe we might realize capital gains. You don't see that in here. That's something separate. He's going to, I believe the procedure is, and I'm learning as I go, but it'll be a governor's letter requesting that. But the capital gains are not profiled in this at this time. What we see here on the capital gains is the ones we actually realized as of June 30th of last year, and those are profiled. And right now, and I happen to support this, unless there's a major change, we will not profile the capital gains for June 30th of this year until they actually arrive.
Further discussion or questions? Thank you. Oh, just a moment. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, just for clarification, so once those capital gains are realized, which account do they go into?
The capital gains, and I'll try to go through it from the beginning, is, you know, we profile for our permanent mineral trust fund on the interest income that goes into our revenue stream for the general fund. And of that, around $230 million, about half of it is fixed income and half of it is projected income from the capital gains. We don't get that till it's realized in June 30th of the year that we receive it, and that goes right into the LSRA.
Anything further? Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Bills on second reading. Senate File 5, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 5, Insurance Limited Lines.
Senate File 5, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 8, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 8, School Capital Construction Capacity.
Senate File 8 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 13, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 13, Uniform Commercial Code Revisions.
Senate File 13 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 30, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 30, Special Districts.
Senate File 30, there is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 30, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 17.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I withdraw that amendment this time, considering there's some research we need to do on it. Thank you.
That amendment has been withdrawn. Senate File 30 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 31, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 31, Wyoming Veterinarian Medical Practice Act.
Senate File 31, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 64, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 64, Wholesale Malt Beverage Distributors Limitations.
Senate File 64, having been read two times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 104, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 104, Education State Administration.
We have some amendments. Will the reading clerk read in amendment number 1?
Senate File 104, second reading amendment number 1, page 6, line 20.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 104. Mr. President, what this amendment does, it goes in on the duties of the Superintendent of Education and adds a little bit more definition or depth, if you will, to the study that the superintendent is required to provide on the state of education. What does it look like? What is the analysis? Are we making progress? Those type of things. And what we're asking for is that the superintendent study the quality of education, including any proposed improvement to address any shortfalls. In other words, this is not intended to be a whitewash. I hope the superintendent would feel free to criticize either the executive branch or the legislative branch if we're not doing things right. We want an opinion. The relevance of the education, particularly in terms of times are changing, economic times, the marketplace is changing, the degrees and so forth, whether they be in the workforce or in the academic area. Those are changing. We need to keep abreast of that. Are we making progress towards the goals that particularly the legislature has set out? Goals such as accountability, goals such as the quality of the education we're offering, the improvement of learning, and then any suggested innovations in education. Mr. Chairman, the Mr. President, the reason I bring this, the superintendent of education is in a unique position. That is a statewide elected office. It represents and reflects the wishes of the entire population of the state, and really on behalf of all of the students in the state. That's the one office that can say, your local school board is your local school board. It doesn't do that. But this is the office that's statewide, that is answerable to the people and to their children who are enrolled in our schools. I think it's a position we've needed for a long time. I think this is the opportunity to provide that voice. I would be happy to answer questions and urge your support of Amendment Number 1.
Discussion. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I think this is a pretty good amendment. I think it puts some things back into the bill that some people had some problems with yesterday, and I think it's, and so I support the amendment, ask the body to vote for it.
Further discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 104, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment has been adopted. There is another amendment, the second reading amendment, number 2. The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 104, second reading amendment number 2, page 3, line 3.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2, amendment number 2 to Senate File 104 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, after the discussion that we had, I think it was a good discussion on committee of the whole, this amendment is kind of brought up to look at some of the areas that were transferred over to the director from the superintendent in the original bill that necessarily didn't have anything to do directly with the delivery of K through 12 education, but nonetheless were very important and goes to some of the questions that the good senator from Bighorn had about there's just nothing left for the superintendent to do. So we give the superintendent's job a little bit more meaning. On page 25 is where the amendment really begins, the first few lines there on page 3. Those are roughly conforming citations or amendments. So if we look on page 25, that has to do with the State Board of Education. Essentially, what we do with this amendment down through line 24, that is allowing the superintendent to have a voting position on the state board, and the director is an ex officio member. We move on to page 33. In that area there, that has to do with the Wyoming Professional Teachers Standard Board. In that one, Mr. President, we simply reinsert the superintendent and delete the director. That has really very little to do with the direct implementation of and providing of K through 12 education. If we move on to the next page on 34, we'll look at the down on line 21, 22, we make that same switch here, and this has to do with some things with local school districts, Mr. Chairman. It's the duties of the Board of Trustees and implement standards of storage for disposal of toxic chemicals and hazardous substances. As far as that, that has really nothing to do directly with K through 12 education. Moving on through page 37. This is in the, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, this is in the area of charter schools. We again make the switch from director to superintendent, put them back in the process of helping with the rules of chartered schools. And again, that continues at the same charter school line through page 39 in those switches back. Moving on, Mr. President, to page 40. Page 40, this is the transportation of isolated pupils. This allows the superintendent to continue in that regard to in the rules in the isolation students. It's approximately about $800,000-$900,000, I believe, are paid in this. Those are foundation funds, which is a relatively small part of the foundation system. Necessarily doesn't have anything directly to do with K through 12 again. Moving on, we looked at page 42, and then we found out what state committee is. There's a one little section in the statute that the state committee used to be the state committee on district boundaries. At some point in time, that was switched over to the state committee shall mean the state board of education. And so that's what that is. And in that area there on district
30 seconds.
Down boundaries, Mr. President, I'd like to the permission to revise my remarks and leave me a couple of minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Mr. President, so that's page 43. Moving on page, going to page 43, we go to 57. I'll flip through that. Fifty-seven is in the School Facilities Commission. It allows the superintendent to be a member of that. Again, moving on to the Community College Commission. Let's see, and they continue on that as they were. The amendment on 59. This is the State Advisory Council for Innovative Education established. Frankly, this isn't, it's really not doing anything right now. Maybe this will move it along if, so we allow the superintendent for two appointments, the director for two appointments. It's on an annual basis, so those are rotated. And same thing over on page 60. And Mr. President, with that went through each one of those areas there. I think it gives the superintendent a little bit more to do. Necessarily doesn't offer any areas of conflict with the superintendent. So I ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. On this amendment, on page 2, this would be for the sponsor when he gets a second chance. Page 2 of your amendment, line 3 of your amendment, it says page 40, line 1, after A, insert. And it seems, let me read it. The Director of State Department of Education shall administer the Education Resource Block Grant Model and perform the duties prescribed under this statute, which in the amendment right there talks about charter schools. Did you mean to have the word and in there? Because it says the director will administer the resource block grant model. Is that what the intent is? Even though it's in kind of an odd place to put that, but did you mean resource block grant as it relates to this section? That would be my question.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Question for the sponsor. On page 1, of the amendment down on line 43. Talks about, it says page 38, lines 1 through 38. I was just clarifying what that deletion really was, because we don't have 38 lines.
It must be a typographical error. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I had the opportunity to work with the sponsor of this amendment to go through and to ensure that this amendment does not stand in the way of the efforts that we've been putting forward with regard to accountability and education, and with the overall approach of Senate File 104 to make sure that we're separating the administrative and fiscal responsibilities in such a manner that we can carry out the objectives that we have. This amendment basically tries to, in a consistent manner with actually the good senator from KC's amendment, make sure that policy recommendations, oversight, analysis, and a lot of these concepts of ensuring general oversight of the education system for the state of Wyoming remain with the superintendent. And it was a very careful approach. And to the best of my understanding, the amendment doesn't do anything that would preclude the education accountability from moving forward. So as I see it, this amendment is perfectly consistent with the intent of Senate File 104 as well as the intent of former Senate Files 57 and 70. It was a well-crafted amendment, and I appreciate the efforts that the sponsor of the amendment put forward as he was drafting it. I'll take the opportunity to try and address one of the comments that was raised by my good friend from Campbell County regarding page 40, line 1. The intent there was to really make sure that the policy side, the rules and regulations side of charter schools were handled by the superintendent. So the overall policy guidance was still remaining with the superintendent of public instruction, while making it very clear that the fiscal side, the funding model side, remains or would go with the director of education within the governor's office. So that's additional language to try to make it very clear that those powers would maintain that delineation. It needed some clarity based on the way the statute was written. As far as the exact language and perform the duties prescribed under the statute, I can see where the confusion is there, and maybe that isn't the perfect language. We'll have to give that some further thought. There might be some confusion there, and I take that point as well, and would look to the sponsor for further clarification. But overall, Mr. President, I would just say this is a well-crafted amendment that was given a lot of thought to ensure that the objectives of Senate File 104 continue while trying to maintain the highest level of possible functionality operation consistent with the constitutional priorities for the superintendent of public instruction.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the good senator from Albany County was correct on what we were attempting to do. I certainly worked with the good senator from Campbell County to craft some language that gets to the point which the good senator from Albany County was trying to allude to. So with that, Mr. President, I ask for your favorable consideration.
The question is, shall a second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 104 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment has been adopted. There's another amendment. Second reading amendment number 3. The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 104, second reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 7.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 104, ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, I was looking through the bill. There was no description for the, I guess, what the director actually had to do, no qualifications for being hired. And essentially that's kind of the problems with some political offices. But with this, I think we needed to get a little more clarity. And so to get that clarity, we reached out to other states, the other states that 40-some states that, or almost 40 states that have directors or chief executive officers for education, and look what other states did to describe the job descriptions, qualifications that they felt was necessary for this position. And when I say we, I worked with the good senator from Albany County, well, both good senators from Albany County, in trying to come up with some of the minimums that we should have in here. And frankly, folks, there were some of those states that went clear back into the college credits that someone would have to have. So they were pretty thorough. This isn't near as thorough as that. And this is a little bit broader, trying to try to get the type of person that has those qualities and those and experience. And the other thing on experience, I talked to some of the local principals in my district, and experience was one of the biggest things that they said you had to have. It had to basically worked out there in the system somewhere, and you had to be successful at it. And those are the type of people that would have the qualifications to be a director. So, Mr. President, I'll just briefly read this so people know what we're talking about. The director shall, at a minimum, hold a master's degree in business, public, or education administration, or other relevant advanced degree from an accredited higher education institution, have a minimum of 10 years of management or administrative experience in education, government, or business, provide credentials demonstrating exceptional accomplishment in previous employment, and provide evidence in problem-solving skills, organizational skills, educational assessment and accountability experience, and knowledge and experience in statistical analysis and school finance. The statistical analysis came from the two senators from Albany County. That might be, from my perspective, I thought it might be a little bit restrictive, but I know the need for statistical analysis when you're looking at all the data that comes in education and some of the choices and that have to be made and some of the things that have to happen with that type of an analysis. So, Mr. President, I'm sure this thing could be twinked one way or the other, but I think this is a good starting point, and I'd ask you to for your favorable consideration, and we'd look at it again on third reading to make any differences that we might want to discuss.
Discussion? Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, I think probably this is a good amendment, too. I know we had some discussion yesterday about the qualifications, who this might be, and I'm not sure it's perfect yet, but it does open the door for this discussion, and I would urge us right now to support the amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for probably somebody on the Education Committee, and going down through there, when you get down to the requirement, one of the elements of this, Mr. President, is provide evidence of and you get down the list of problem-solving skills, organizational skills, and this is the question right here, education, assessment, and accountability experience. And I'm just wondering, I was under the impression that what we were doing was kind of a leading, was fairly new, and I guess my question to somebody from the Education Committee or who worked on the accountability bills is, is that available out there? Would we find a person with experience in education, assessment, accountability experience if this is kind of a leading edge request or what we're effort that we're trying to undertake here?
Senator Rothfuss, Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, it is going to narrow the field, obviously, but at the same time, there are a lot of people out there that are working on education accountability, even within the district. Our statewide education accountability is something that is kind of cutting edge, but that's not to say that accountability measures aren't taking place in all the districts of the state. So I think it does narrow the field, but it narrows it in a way, frankly, that we would want to narrow the field. And I too, think that there's some possibilities of improvement of this amendment, but overall I appreciate the opportunity to work on the amendment and certainly support it and hope this body does as well.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been out of the profession long enough that I can by no means claim the label of expert, but It seems to me, and I think this is a very good amendment, and it goes in the right direction. I think the attempts are good. I think what we're trying to do here is to get a contemporary description that matches the contemporary need. And, you know, there's a lot going on across the country in regard to assessment and accountability. I think there are people out there. A lot of semantics involved here, and one of the things that's used commonly in the profession in regard to trying to quantify this is someone who's qualified in tests and measurements, and that's maybe a little broader scope and has a little broader stroke than what we're talking about. But those are adjustments that I think can be made to what I think is a good amendment.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Oh, excuse me. I'm so sorry. Senator Escobel.
Mr. President, no, I also agree. I think this is a real good amendment. Some of the questions that I have, though, is, you know, where it states about demonstrating exceptional accomplishment. I was just wondering how you measure that and how you define it. You know, just a question that came to my mind, especially in thinking of some people that have some real great accomplishments that do not have a college education. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, and some of those individuals. You know, so I guess I was just think that we should leave the door open for some of those type of individuals that might not possess some of these minimum requirements, but certainly have major accomplishments. Thank you.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? Question's been called. The motion is, shall second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 104 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. We have another amendment. Second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 104. The reading clerk will please read the amendment.
Senate File 104, second reading amendment number 4, page 2, line 6.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 104 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this goes into essentially how the director is removed and how that can occur. We say in the first line that the governor may for cause. And for cause, those are those reasons that are fairly substantial. There's a criminal activity, there's some fraud, things that rise to a very, very high standard before the person can be dismissed. Then, Mr. President, this is something we haven't done before, but I think it's something that we should take some time and consider. And this is on lines 7, 8, and 9. This says, submitted to the Senate every 2 years during the general session for confirmation. So this, Mr. President, is something new. It allows the Senate to reconfirm the director every 2 years. The governor doesn't submit his name. It's just automatic. Goes through the Senate. Goes through the same process that we have any other confirmation. They'd be interviewed by the Education Committee. Education Committee would probably give us a recommendation as to whether or not this guy's doing his job. And if they're not doing this job, then it's up to this floor to decide whether or not we should reconfirm that person for that position. So this is something a little new, but I think that in the light and importance of education, this is something that bears a little discussion and a little thought. Then, Mr. President, it kind of surprised me that on lines 19 through 29, that this wasn't part of the original bill, because it adds in the Director of Department of Education that allows the governor to this person to serve at the governor's pleasure. So those are three kind of distinct things. I think 19 through 29, probably absolutely. The other two, I would certainly hope so, because I think you just don't want to fire somebody unless you got good cause. And we've got the other section there that that they stand for reconfirmation every 2 years. So don't know if I can explain it any better. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question for the bringer of this amendment. Not that I'm opposed to it or anything, but I'm just curious to, you know, there's a difference between confirming someone and affirming them, and I'm just wondering if we possibly could run a file of the Constitution in some way for our confirmation process versus affirmation, you know, and I don't know, but it's just a question I want to throw out to ask.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I'd like to divide this amendment.
Okay.
Mr. President, I'd like the first division to be lines 1 through 5 and lines 14 through 29. That would be division 1.
14 through 29.
And the second division would be lines 7 through line 12. And that would be division 2.
Okay. Proposal is to divide the amendment. The first division would be lines 1 through 5 and lines 14 through 29. And the second division will be lines 6 through lines 12. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. President, that is.
That appears to be in order. Would you like to address the first division?
On the first division, I have no problem with it.
Anybody else like to speak to the first division? Senator Perkins.
No, I guess, yes, I do. On the first division, you know, this is, you know, fellow senators, what you've got here is you've got a director who is to serve right now at the pleasure of the governor. And when you put in this for cause, then you create a whole different situation. Ultimately, you've created much like a contract situation, and it's going to be much, much more difficult to replace the director. Now, that may be an appropriate circumstance. The good news is it may be difficult to replace the director. The bad news is it may be difficult to replace the director. And so, like most things, this has a double-edged sword. And so, I, as you look at this, I think that when you have a director, and you look at, we have directors, most all of our directors either serve at the pleasure of the commission that appoints them, of the board that appoints them, or at the pleasure of the governor. And I think we don't want to go down this road. We want, if this is what we're going to do, we want these people to be answerable to the public servants, whether that's the governor, whether that's the board, or whether that's the commission, or someone else. And when it's at the pleasure, if they're not carrying out or not fulfilling the requirements and the programs and the directives set down by this body or by others who are in charge of them and that they're answering to, I think it's a mistake. That's how you develop responsiveness, is not by creating insulation from consequences or from things that just aren't working out or that for whatever reason. I think that it's, you know, we have continuing contract status for teachers, but as the fact of the matter is, if you go around to your, once you get to into administration, oftentimes those administrators are, you know, they serve at the pleasure of the boards that appoint them for a very good reason, and I think we would be remiss to interfere and interpose this requirement into this directorship. Mr. President, thank you.
Discussion? Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. President, I want to agree with the senator from Casper. We're making that for-cause removal, which is a whole other legal problem that a lot of attorneys like to discuss in court, for-cause. And the verbiage in the 91202 already says that it is at the pleasure of the governor. And then we're inserting that in the page 3, line 15. We're making that insertion. So I think we're saying two different things in this amendment, even though we split it in two amendments. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, for my first time on this division, however, because a good senator, first standing senator from Casper, talked about the second division, about I'm not sure whether I should be talking about both divisions or not when he mentioned that we should be able to, if the director doesn't do something this body likes, that we should be able to make sure that they're fired. Mr. President, this is the exact reason, as these two good senators, I think, aptly said, is that it makes it harder for this person to be fired. And let's look at where we're at right now, folks. These people are elected. The people that have the duties of this responsibility that we're changing are elected for 4 years, and the governor can't fire them. Essentially, this is the first time we're going to get to fire them. Once, one bite of the apple, this is it. Now, we look at it from the situation is that you go from an elected position to an appointed position, and is there anywhere in between? Well, Mr. President, this is the in-between. If they're fired for cause, then this is the in-between. So that's essentially what this does, is that it puts us back more toward the middle. It doesn't allow the governor to essentially say, I don't agree with the legislature, I don't agree with the director, and the director's following the legislature's mandate, but I don't agree with him, so I'm going to fire the director and put another director in there. And the legislature can't do anything about it right now. And the governor has full total control in this bill without the for cause and without the second part of the division. So I'm trying to bring it back to where the legislature has some authority, and when the governor has less authority and the director has more autonomy, where they have complete autonomy now, only answerable to the voter. In this situation, they would be answerable to the governor for cause. And I think that's a good compromise. That's a good compromise. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
President, on and against this section of the amendment, it seems to me that you put the for cause language in there, and then what we've done across the broad sweep of the departments is the governor, typically the directors serve at the pleasure of the governor, and if they do a second-rate job, he can replace them. You put the for-cause language in there, you got a second-rate job, the governor can't do anything about it because they haven't, you know, committed a criminal act or some of the other things that the courts have held to be cause, and it's much more restrictive. And I think at this level, it's entirely inappropriate. I frankly agree with the other senators from Natrona County.
Further discussion, Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I agree with those before me that say that they don't like this amendment. When I was the deputy on a state agency, I had tenure, essentially. I could be removed for cause, and it would have been difficult. But I applied for promotion to be the director of that agency and serve at the pleasure of. And I knew it at the beginning that I was serving at the pleasure of. And I happily did for well over a decade, and then I resigned on my own. So anybody that's going to apply for that job understands at the pleasure of, and they're probably coming from another job at the pleasure of, and at a certain level of life, that's the way it is in your employment.
Further discussion? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the intention of this division is quite well intended, but as I think about all the potential outcomes, I think there's a real inconsistency between the intention and the potential outcome. And so for that reason, I think this division would be best put aside.
Further discussion? The question is then, we're voting on division number one. Senator Meyer.
Withdraw this amendment, and I'll hope to work with the other folks that have some concerns to bring back something that would give some autonomy to the position and allow the legislature some input in the future. If we can craft something, Mr. President, you'll see another amendment. If we can't, then I guess the bill can stand as it is.
With that...
Mr. President, I'm withdrawing the whole amendment, this division and the second division.
Okay. So the amendment, or second reading amendment number 4 has been withdrawn by the sponsor.
Well, that's why I put this in, Phil.
Senator Von Flatern.
I have the privilege of the floor for a moment on that.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. President. Fellow senators, understand, once the call has been made on a motion, that you, technically, it's owned by the body. So if you want to throw an amendment out there just to create a great discussion and then pull it back, you may not someday. The president or the chair may actually say, no, it's owned by the body, and we'll vote on it. So be careful on that.
Okay, we have another amendment. It's the second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 104. The reading clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 104, second reading amendment number 5. Delete the Meyer second reading amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd move the amendment number 5. Second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 104 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. What we have here actually is a way to potentially give some more autonomy. I think this is an important discussion. I think that going back and through, looking at a number of the statutes, and what you have is a lot of the directors and a lot of individuals, executives in various functions. We have various of our commissions and YDOTs actually elect or appoint the director themselves. And so what this does is this puts the opportunity for the, instead of the governor appointing this individual, to be appointed by the Board of Education. And so what we have here, the meat of this is simply in the very first part of it, page 2, line 2, where we delete governor, insert the State Board of Education. And then the other part that it did is we've already addressed part of that, but it also just inserted that this individual will have outstanding professional qualifications. That's a little bit surplusage now in light of the amendment that we've already passed earlier. And then the rest of those are simply conforming amendments to ensure that it's the State Board of Education that appoints this individual. I think the reason that that's important is it is somewhat of a compromised position in that you have a board that is appointed by the governor, who the members of that board, I believe, have undergone and have the consent of the Senate. But because that board and they're staggered, the terms of that board are staggered, it's difficult for one governor to necessarily have appointed everybody on that board. So it creates some insulation and some degree of autonomy. You have a Board of Education now that actually has the oversight and the director reports to that Board of Education. And so that's what this does. So with that, I would move for your favorable consideration, and I think that it is a little bit of a compromised position as we've worked through this bill, and I think that it could, Mr. President, I think it could work either way, with either this being appointed by the board or with the governor, but this is another alternative that is consistent with many of the other functions of our very important departments in our state government, and it's certainly an option I think we can discuss and talk about and that would be appropriate under these circumstances.
Further discussion, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, and I'm sure you've all received some information about the various models that are used in our country and how they deal with the State Board and the Board of Education, whether they're elected or appointed. And this is one of those models where you have the governor, as my colleague from Natrona County suggested, the governor appoints the board, then the board selects the person to be the director of the Department of Ed. I will tell you that I have visited with a couple of our board members, and they understand the seriousness of this entire debate, and they have their own opinions, but both of them thought they could live with this if this body decided to move forward in this direction.
Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, it seems to me that the authors of the bill have already devised what is the compromise which you see in the bill, and here's my concern. You know, there are 92 people that are elected to serve the people in a constitutional capacity to administer the education laws of the state. 90 of those people are legislators, the other two are the superintendent and the governor. And when you now begin to talk about this position, if you go back and look at the Ferrari report, it recommended a cabinet-level position in the governor's office. So that if the governor is going to be the person who is responsible to hire or to essentially fire the person, all of us, all 90 of us, when we run on a platform of education that we disclosed, your voters know where you stand and you're elected here, but we can't administer the executive side of the branch. Now, when you move it into the function into the executive branch, and you have to be responsible to somebody who is fully elected. And the elected person that's in charge of that responsibility ought to have the capacity to make changes and to have a great influence on his person. It'd be no different than saying, well, Governor, you're responsible for the Department of Workforce Services, but you can't select who your director is. You're confined to take your mission, if you will, without any capacity to define who's working for you. Now, I personally think that it ought to be a cabinet-level decision where the governor picks the director like any other director, whether it's the director of DEQ, Workforce Services, Department of any of the other departments. The drafters wanted to create a model more like the judiciary where that we have a selection committee and they give the governor three selections. I think that's a dilution of his power because he's not able to go out and find the person he thinks is the most competent to fill that position. And he's the one who stands for election, in this instance, of the 92 that we're charging for to administer the legislative, those 90 electors. This person is in charge to do that. He's responsible to the taxpayers or the voters, and if he makes a campaign and he wants to go in and make changes and he finds that he can't even direct who's going to implement it, it dilutes the capacity. So I submit to you that in this instance, to make this work, it ought to be the governor who appoints the person that's responsible to him. The compromise has already been forged, and that is the forge that the compromise is that he has to then get qualified people from another board, and we've just made sure that the state superintendent is a voting member of that board. The others are appointed. So the existing compromise is a good compromise. I'd urge you to reject this amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment, and to use the discussion that the good senator from Albany County just discussed, there's 92 elected officials. But guess what in those 92 visions? There's a House, there's a Senate, and there's an executive branch. And there's one basic premise here that we need to examine, and that's the foundation principles of our government. And that's the division of power. So nobody accumulates too much power in one position. Education is a pretty important position. So if we operate under the presumption that education is present in the compromised position here, the compromised position is right now, you've all got the same emails that I've got. The people of Wyoming feel like the power has been stripped from the people. And one of the concerns is a consolidation of power that's a violation of the very principles that this country was founded on. And that's a subdivision of power. It is a dilution. Our whole form of government is a dilution, so you don't have housed in any one body too much authority. So I would tell you this is the compromise position. So you can either prescribe to the philosophy that we take one elected official and now we shove all that into one more elected official, so now you have a super elected official. That's not acceptable to the people of the state of Wyoming. This is the compromise position, because this is a subdivision of power. I would encourage your vote yay in favor of the amendment.
Senator Hicks, next time that you address, I didn't want to interrupt you, but you do need to speak into the mic so that it goes out over the web. Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and against this amendment, it seems to me that what this amendment does is take the power out of the hands of an elected official who is responsible to the people and can be removed by the people and will be responsive to the needs of the people, and giving it to a set of people who are appointed and not elected. I think it dilutes the ability of the people to control what goes on in education, which is perhaps the most important function our state government has. I think it confuses the responsibility. When we did the government reorganization that's been referred to, it's a result of the Ferrier Report, we went away from that style of government because it doesn't work very well, because you get special interests controlling some of these various boards, and you lose the ability to get the kind of changes and reforms that are made. You lose the ability of the people to control what goes on. And so I think the bill as it stands works quite well, and this amendment will cause significant difficulty in getting the kind of responsibility and accountability that we need.
Further discussion, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I too rise in opposition to the amendment. You know, if you look at the sheet I handed out, clearly under Model 2, there are six states, including our neighbors to the south, the Greenies, Utah, that do elect a state board. Now, if we were to go down that path, I wouldn't have any problems with the amendment. But remember also in the bill, the State Board of Education comes up with three names to be submitted to the governor. They come up with the three names to submit to the governor for his consideration. So I'd ask you to defeat the amendment. I do think that ultimately an elected official, whether it's an elected board, which we don't have, or a statewide elected official like the governor, needs to make that final decision.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Mr. President, my heart has been lifted that the good senator from Park County told us the solution to the problem, that that's a third reading amendment. On third reading, we bring an amendment to elect the state school board so they can appoint director. I think that's an excellent idea, and I'm excited to embrace it. And this is with the full confidence of the good senator from Park County. Maybe we can do a whole year's interim work in three readings, and I think we can get it done. We just got to work together.
Serco.
Mr. President, it was not my intent to put the Meyer Amendment machine back into motion.
Further discussion, Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, when I'm looking at this and listening to the discussion, it seems this is fairly similar to what's going on over at our university with an appointed board selecting the president. And if you're comfortable with that, then this fits what's already in practice, I think, over at the university. And just a question out there. I've got some concerns.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question is, shall a second reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 104 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Division has been called. All those in favor, please stand. 9. All those opposed, please stand. Second reading, amendment number 5 has failed. Senate file 104, having been read 2 separate times, question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list. The consent list is as follows. Senate File 33, Search and Rescue Program Donations. Senate File 41, State Parks ATM Donations. Senate File 43, State Parks Acquisition of Lands. Senate File 44, First Responder Retirement Account Payment Rules. And Senate File 46, Protecting Veteran Disability Compensation in Divorce.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 33, Search and Rescue Program Donations. Senate File 41, State Parks ATM Donations. Senate File 43, State Park Acquisition of Lands. Senate File 44, First Responder Retirement Account Payment Rules. And Senate File 46, Protecting Veteran Disability Compensation in Divorce. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case. Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins, Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross,
aye.
On the consent list, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 33, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 33, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 41, are there any changes? Dockstader, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 25 ayes, 5 noes. Senate File 43, are there any changes? Dockstader, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 43, 28 ayes, 2 noes. Senate File 44, are there any changes? Case, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 44, 30 ayes. Senate File 46, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 46, 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate Files 33, Senate File 41, Senate File 43, Senate File 44, and Senate File 46 have passed the Senate. Senate File 45, third reading of the Senate File. Reading clerk, please read the Senate File. There is an amendment. I would ask the reading clerk to also read that amendment.
Senate File 45, Restricted Driver's License Modification, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to motor vehicles, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 45 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, following the...
Just a moment. Pardon? Sorry. Has not been read in.
The clerk, please read it in, Mr. President.
Senate File 45, third reading amendment number one. Delete the Landon second reading amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, following the debate on this particular issue, I got together with some folks, and I think we came up with a compromise here, Mr. President, and it says that the licensee may transport no more than three passengers under the age of 18 who are not members of the licensee's immediate family and may do so only at the direction of his parent or guardian. Mr. President, I think that's going to limit the concerns that most people had with the abuse part of the statute that could occur, because you have the parental responsibility and you have a limitation that's reasonable. So I'd ask for your favorable consideration, Mr. President.
Any discussion? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought that we had a good conversation about this issue on first reading, and met with the folks in the back of the room who represent constituencies that are much more rural than the district I represent. And you know, my purpose in bringing this to the chamber was to simply have a conversation about 14 and 15-year-olds driving cars. I do think this is a compromise, and so I agreed to join my colleagues at the back. Because, you know, I just could picture this image of a car rolling down the road with a 14-year-old driver and six or eight people in that car. This is a compromise. You can vote it up or down. I think that it still puts some limits there. I'm not quite sure how we can involve a parent or a guardian and how the Highway Patrol is going to determine that, but there's still a little bit of a limitation here, and hopefully addresses the problems that were outlined yesterday with regard to our rural environments where some of these kids are trying to get to work. So I would stand in favor of the amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, I feel as if the amendment that we heard on second reading was actually the compromise amendment. We have a situation where we have a graduated driver's license. We're still trying to loosen the restrictions beyond what a 16-year-old is able to do. Having one passenger in the car under the age of 18 when you have a 14 or 15-year-old driver honestly still doesn't seem particularly safe in my view. I do understand that my view is not the view of the body in this situation, and I represent a constituency that's different from the constituencies of many of you. I feel like we got it right on second reading. I'm going to be opposing the amendment, and I hope the body does as well.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. President, and I rise in support of the amendment. And folks, first of all, let me urge you, do not confuse this permit with a graduated driver's license. It's got nothing to do with each other. If you pass the qualifications for a graduated driver's license, you're entitled to get one, period. It's a rigorous program, but you're entitled to it. This working permit, got to have your parents sign off on it. Absolutely, they got to say it's okay. They're the ones that are held accountable in this. And I think it's wrong for this body to ever step between a child and his parents and say, parents, you don't know what you're doing and you don't know when you're keeping your children safe. That's not where we ought to go. These hardship licenses, by and large, are a family affair. And families are incredibly accountable, and families protect the safety of their own. Do what you want with a graduated driver's license. It's an entirely different system. Are there a lot of these out there? No. But they fill a unique need, given the nature of this state, given the work ethic in this state, given the fundamental industries we have in this state. These permits fill a unique role, and they complement some of the things that are the fabric of our community, which is families, and families being accountable to their own. I urge you to support the amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the proponents of the amendment. I guess as I look at this, and I understand not wanting to get in the middle of families, but what we're talking about is now allowing this individual to transport members of other families. And it says may only do so at the direction of his or parent or guardian. To me, that seems to be climbing right in the middle of another family. You're saying that if I give Mike, it seems to me that this amendment would indicate that if I've given and have the opportunity to do that, that I can give my kid permission to haul other kids. And in the end, I just don't know that I agree that as families, I agree that's why we have these things. I agree that's why I have these work permits. But now we're really going to create a class where a family can arrange to be transportation for other families. And I'm struggling with that. These individuals are out on the public roads. So it doesn't just impact the family. It impacts anybody who they come in contact with on a public road. In addition, now we're also, we've gone from one passenger to now we have up to three passengers who are not members of that family. To me, it seems that this just keeps getting broader and broader, and it seems to go beyond where it was originally intended to be.
Senator Escobel.
Mr. President, I guess one of the concerns I have with this amendment is that it states that the driver may do so only at the direction of his parent. I can picture a scenario where a child gets in trouble and says that father said he could, and mother says she couldn't. And I was just wondering how you're going to resolve that dilemma where parents disagree as to what the child may or may not do. Thank you.
Senator Bob Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll just remind the body that the majority of the hardship licenses in Campbell County actually are in the urban area, and it only takes a working single mom or two parents working. So we're not talking, and my area is so different than the senator from KC, but I will tell you the majority is in the urban area, and it doesn't take a lot to get one. And this is so different than a graduated driver's license, you might as well just get a hardship, and you can circumvent everything about the graduated.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I need a point of clarification. As I read this, this says that there's three passengers that are not of the immediate family, but there could be three or four passengers that were of the immediate family is the way I read this. So he could transport however many seat belts he had. Maybe he has seven seat belts. He could transport all of them, as I understand how this is written. Maybe the maker could clear that up for me.
Further discussion. Senator Schiffer, for your second time.
Mr. President, for my second time, and I'll try and address the concerns. Irrespective of whether it's a rural driver or an urban driver, it does take a sign-off from the local highway patrol. That's the gatekeeper in this. If the local highway patrol says, nope, you wait and you go the standard route with a graduated driver's license, that's their authority. They're empowered to do it. Whether they're doing their job or not, I have no idea. I will tell you, and we have a highway patrolman in Johnson County, and he certainly does his job very, very thoroughly. He's great at it, actually. I compliment him. He knows exactly what he's doing. Second thing, numbers of seat belts. I guess, you know, I agree with you. If they don't have a seatbelt, let's don't let them on. Let's not load up a cattle truck with kids or anything like that. We don't want to do that anyway. It'd be cruel and unusual. So, yes, I think you're actually right for my colleague from Natrona County. In terms of responsibility and accountability, if something bad happens, guess who is responsible for that car and that young person? It's his parents. That's who buys the insurance. That's who permits him to do this. That's exactly what I was getting at. Now, if other parents don't want their kid to ride with him, they can do as they like. But this is a measure of accountability, and I think it's a good measure. If he's driving his parents' car, and that's usually what happens, or maybe they buy him a car, I don't know. They're the ones that are going to be held accountable. And I think parents understand that very, very well. I urge your support for the amendment.
Further discussion?
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 45 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 45 is passed. Are you ready for the question on the bill? The question is, Senate File 45 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye. Oh, excuse me.
Rothfuss.
No.
Schiffer.
Voting for you, babe.
Scott.
No.
Von Slatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing. Nicholas, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 22 ayes, 8 noes.
By your vote, Senate File 45 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Oops. Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor, if I may.
You may.
Earlier, I apologize, I missed the opportunity to have Senate File 43 set aside just for a clarification, correction. And that was the other day when we were talking about it. There was a $20,000 expenditure for surveying, and I found out from State Parks that $20,000 actually came out of a different account than was portrayed on the floor. And that account is the site criteria account. So it's already in their budget. They have it, but we just put the wrong information out on where the money was coming from.
Thank you, Senator Christian. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Better late than never. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Case.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 11. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 11, Circuit Court Magistrate, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to magistrates of the Circuit Court. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, and Hicks. No, Senator Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 11, Circuit Court Magistrates. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Reading clerk.
Senate File 11, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 1.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go ahead and move. I move the standing committee amendment.
Yes, sir.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to yield the floor to Senator Burns, who is going to carry this wonderful bill.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 11 actually came to us at the request of the Supreme Court, and this is all part of the ongoing efforts by all of us to try and rein in the various costs, the costs of government within the state of Wyoming. And what this bill would do, if you go on to page 2, is the meat of the bill down on lines 12 through 19. And what it does is it gives the Supreme Court the flexibility when a vacancy comes up in the office of a full-time magistrate to look at this, evaluate it, look at the weighted caseload study, and decide whether or not to put in a full-time magistrate again, replace it with a full-time or partial, or gives them the authority to go to a part-time magistrate, which obviously costs a lot less. When we're looking at when the governor's request came out for various agencies to and for the various committees in the legislature to look at cuts, potential cuts, it became quite difficult in the judicial area, because you've got courts and you've got judges and you've got their employees, and there really isn't a whole lot of fat to be trimmed in that area. This is their effort to try and abide by that concern. The amendment, the standing committee amendment, came about after concern was expressed over the county commissioners in that particular jurisdiction where these magistrates are. And so the amendment was added that the county commissioners would be consulted with before this step was taken. And with that, I would, barring any questions, I would ask for a vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Any discussion of the amendment? Any discussion? Seeing none, the question is on the standing committee amendment to Senate File 11. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, there for those who want a better explanation that I've actually given, if you look at the back page of the bill itself, on the fiscal note, it just plainly states that the Supreme Court determines that some or all of the magistrate's positions are not necessary. The Supreme Court estimates annual savings of up to $175,000 or $350,000 a biennium. And that's going on the assumption that some of the savings will actually go back to judges who will have to travel a little more to make up for some of the time of some of these magistrates.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? The question is on Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Hall rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 11. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 11 has passed Committee of the Hall. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 14. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 14, Correctional Industries, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to penal institutions. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, and Schiffer. No, Senator Hicks. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 14, Correctional Industries. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it goes in to our correctional industry program, and the real essence of it is rather than just manufactured goods, it allows correctional industries to go into services. That's really what we're talking about here. And that's right at the top of page 2. And I'll run through the bill very briefly. Much of it is just to make conforming amendments to what we're doing now and some streamlining of this system. But the essence of the bill, let me reiterate, is to allow correctional industries to go into services. Still on page 2, subparagraph E, particularly as it deals with lines 10 and 11, that is a consolidation of the correctional industries account. Previously, there was one account for each institution. This puts them all together into one. Mr. Chairman will recall, when those accounts reach $5 million, there's a sweep, and that money goes to the general fund. The $5 million is the working capital for the correctional industries in all of our penal institutions. That's just basically housekeeping or simplification. It goes on the top of page 3, starting on line 5. What we're talking about here is the bidding of services. What we're doing on page 3 at the line 5, subparagraph F, is that in terms of purchasing goods to provide the services, and again, that's manufacturing and provision of services, the Department of Corrections will not be bound to go through ANI's bidding process. Those folks have to react to a request by industry to provide a service. They've got to be nimble. The procedure going through ANI, nimble is not the word that comes to mind when you go through that process. And so that's what that does. In addition, going down on lines 9 through 12, other state agencies can buy services from correctional industries without going through the full-blown bidding process. Again, we're trying to make them somewhat competitive, if we can, to real-world situations. Mr. Chairman, on page 4, there's the one change. That's housekeeping, the provision of services on line 6. And again, on page 5, line 9, that's to make conforming language. This act is effective July 1st of 2013. Pretty straightforward. What we're trying to do, Mr. Chairman, is react to the modern economy, where it's possible to teach a skill to inmates in our correctional system. Why is this important? If we're going to have some chance of having them be successful on the outside, we want to teach them skill. We want to, even more important, teach them a work ethic. Many, many of these people have no idea what it's like to even show up for a job on a consistent and timely basis, what a work ethic is, those types of skills. We talk about correctional behavior therapy. This is the way you do it. It's part of that. It's a component of it. Teaching these people how to be working members of our society. And remember, Mr. Chairman, most inmates, doesn't matter which facility you talk about, are going to get on the outside sooner or later. And our hope is that with correctional industries, we can at least hope that the recidivism rate will stay as good as it is now. And I'm very proud of our recidivism rate. It's better than most states in the nation. But this is another tool we have to enhance that. I'd be glad to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a couple of questions I'd have is, was there any discussion about what types of services would not be allowed to take place at the prison? I'm thinking of things that deal with credit card numbers or HIPAA, health things. I'm assuming that these folks might do something like a call center or something, but I'm trying to figure out how a call center would work, because most of them have something to do with credit card, I guess maybe some computer analysis, so you don't get somebody from a third world country, but then again, they might have access to a computer remotely. I'm trying to figure out what restrictions, if any, were discussed, and along those lines, as far as any specific services that were thought that, yeah, they can do that, and this is something we need to get started on right away. So those are the couple of things that I'd like to find out. Basically, what appears to be readily available to move right into as far as services, and what things were decided, any discussion about things that should not be on the table.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Anybody else like to ask a question? We could tag on here. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I had another question for the chairman of the committee. It's along with the services, but also the security. I assume the services would more likely be outside the institution. The manufacturing, the programs we have now are in the institution. But we're talking about doing services for private industry. I assume that the inmate would need to go outside the institution. And if there's the discussion you might have had on the security for handling that.
Senator Landon. Boy, we're going to pile on. Don't get him too deep. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for riding a little bit slower horse this morning. I'm just having a little bit of difficulty getting arms around the need to be nimble and quick. And you have me there for a little while, Senator, but I just am not quite getting there with, the need to, to use state funds to get out there and purchase things without people having a shot at those contracts. And I just can't come up with something where we would need to go outside the bid process that the state of Wyoming uses. And maybe you could help me just a little bit with that.
Okay. Senator Christensen, are you a white knight here?
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. To try to answer a couple of those questions, when we were at the Honor Farm, we talked about that and services, and that conversation came up, and they used the example of buying a particular material to make uniforms for the inmates, and how it came on the market in great volume at a great price, and they weren't able to take advantage of that when the time was there. And so that was one example on buying raw materials. And the other side of that is when someone needs a service that isn't provided locally, they can then look at it and see if they can provide that service and respond in a timely manner as opposed to we'll get back to you in 6 or 8 months. And so on that part of it, as for some of the new services and operations, you know, there were discussions about lock picking, I mean, building locks, gun manufacturing. No, it wasn't anything like that. Primarily operations that could occur on the grounds, braille transcription services, a call center, contract labor, data entry, document scanning, laundry services, vehicle services. One of the examples was gas engine conversion on state vehicles to natural gas vehicles. You know, in this early days of this industry and pioneering some of those conversions, they were interested in looking at that. One of the things that we talked about, and it came up both at the Honor Farm, it came up in our committee meetings, and it came up just the other day, was competition with local industry and the sensitivity about going into a competitive environment. And the example that was used was with the laundry service in one of the towns that they're based out of. There isn't a laundry service. And so this was an opportunity for them to fill a niche and take care of laundry services and maybe create some skills and some public service. I asked him about, say you come up with a really successful business, and then on the outside, all of a sudden everybody else is clamoring to get a piece of the pie. Are you automatically going to shut your doors just based on speculation? And they indicated that after studying it and determining which would be appropriate services to get engaged in that didn't create competition, if they did create, come up with a good solution, they wouldn't necessarily run from an immediate response out in the community of, now that you're doing, we want to do it. They're a little more stable than that. And so it's not about moving people out, and they're being very careful and very cautious and trying to take care of their good record.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Let's go to Senator Anderson, District 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appears to be a good bill at appropriate time with an appropriate measure. The question that I would ask, many of the things that are spelled out in regard to skills that are needed in order to provide service seem to be consistent with some of the objectives we have with our community colleges in regard to vocational technical instruction. Question being, in regard to the participation between the two corrections department and our community college, is there a link in regard to providing instruction that might be provided by community colleges? I know that one, our medium correctional facility in the eastern side of the state is in the same location as one of our community colleges. Was there any discussion about the instruction and the cooperation between the agencies and the community college in order to provide the skills necessary to provide the service?
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have an answer. I'm standing up because nobody was answering. I have another question that I'd like explained to me on page 3, line 5 through 12, where we say this paragraph shall not apply. But on line 9 at the end of it, it talks about the procurement of goods or services from the Department of Corrections. And I'm trying to understand, why is there, the rest of that paragraph talks about purchase of feed by the Game and Fish, and but this is actually purchasing from the department, and it doesn't seem to fit into this, so I'm curious why that's there.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Schiffer, let's go to you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer the two questions that have come up. First of all, in terms of the community colleges, for many years, the community colleges have worked with the Department of Corrections, and that is, I know Western works with the prison in Rawlins, the high security prison, Eastern Wyoming works with the correctional facility in Torrington, and it's actually a long-standing relationship. Providing courses, and it's, I'll just give you an example. And I'm going to use a prisoner in Rawlins,
doing a life sentence, went from less than a high school, he didn't get a high school degree, went to prison, got his GED, got a degree from Western Wyoming, actually got an advanced degree from Western Wyoming, or not advanced, but you know, another degree, ended up as an instructor in Rawlins, teaching courses for Western Wyoming College. It's a great relationship. I will submit to you it is unique. It's one of the reasons we do better, have a lower recidivism rate than most other states, is because of that, and it is truly a relationship. The colleges offer courses, but the colleges also nurture those prisoners as students. And that's unique. I hope we can continue that. I hope we can build on it, as a matter of fact, because things are changing. In terms of, okay, let me deal with the question. Over on page 3, starting on line 9, and I mentioned this, but I'm, let me go back and talk about it in more detail. What this allows is for another state agency to contract for services within one of our prisons. Let me give you an example. Game and Fish can contract with the women's prison over in Niobrara County to provide, and I'm not sure what they do, it's license tabulation or license registering, you know, when you go in on the computer. That's a regular program that they've got going there. It's between two different state agencies that know how to, the peculiarities of Game and Fish's licensing processing, if you will. As you are aware, that's a growth industry in Game and Fish. I forget just when it happens, but here pretty quick, you won't get hard copies. You're going to have to do all your license drawing and stuff is all going to be done with computer. It's hard to describe a prison industry as a growth industry, but we might have found one in this state. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, so long as they can provide the service at a competitive rate and it teaches a skill, which is basically the translation of requests coming in by computer into the discharge of or sending out a license. That's a skill. That's what we're talking about in this. Another state agency can come in and contract for services, and I believe they're competitive, as far as I know, and do good work. I think everybody that needs a license, you know, has a square shot at it, and those ladies are the ones that do the behind-the-scenes stuff. I hope I've answered those questions.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Barnard.
Inmates to create a product or a service, and I have a question: if what happens if someone is injured by this product or this service, and a suit is brought forth, who is liable? Is the inmate liable, or is the prison liable? Is the state liable? If there is a return or a problem with that, does the inmate have to return the money for that product? And so I just have some general business questions about this bill.
Who can answer that question? Senator Schiffer?
Mr. President, being the liability attorney that I'm not, let's face it, when you get sent to prison, you get medical care. It's one of the fringe benefits of being sentenced to prison. And we provide prisoners with medical care. Just the way it is. And it's one of the big expenses we have. In terms of, you asked about the money. These prisoners are paid a certain amount by statute. There are a number of places the money has to go first. They've got to make restitution. They've got to pay into the crime victims' compensation fund. They've got to do anything else the judge laid on them when he sent them there. And there's one other one that slips my mind. And then what's left over after there, and they can get paid. It depends what the skill level is, whether they're working in a laundry, doing laundry work, or doing computer processing, those kind of things. They do get, if they earn it, the last time I checked the figure was $15 a month that they can draw out. Otherwise, it goes into their account. After they satisfy all the legal requirements, and when they are removed from prison, they get what's in their account. It is not a in any stretch of the imagination a get-rich scheme. I hope that answers my colleague's question.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a few moments ago, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee mentioned the recidivism rate, which I understand is good. My question, Mr. Chairman, is can he tell us what the current recidivism rate is and how it's computed?
That'll teach him to throw statistics out there. Senator Perkins.
It's not returned to the jurisdiction or the custody of the Wyoming Department of Corrections within 3 years of release. Pardon me? What is the recidivism rate? The recidivism rate, it depends who you talk to, but it's somewhere between, the recidivism rate is somewhere between 10% in some cases. Some people tell you 10%, some people tell you 30%. But overall, that means that we've got 9 out of 10, somewhere between 9 out of 10 and 7 out of 10 not returning to prison within 3 years of their release.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Any further discussion on this file? Senator Anderson, District 2.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regard to the recidivism rate, am I not correct in that Wyoming recently received recognition for having one of the better recidivism rates in the United States? Is that not correct?
I see people nodding, yes. Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the assistance from my colleague from Natrona County. It is 3 years. I understand that if you start breaking those numbers down, there are certain offenses where it climbs appreciably. There are others where we're really doing very well. But overall, we do have a very, very low recidivism rate. But I think you achieve that by a whole bunch of different measures, of which this is just one. It takes a good counseling, behavior modification, all those things. It isn't a single component that does that. I want to stress that. This is, I doubt if this, I don't know if this will even make a tick downward. I don't have any idea. But it's a whole bunch of things, and it's being creative in how you treat criminality. That's what drives the recidivism rate.
Thank you, Senator.
Back on the raise a criminal. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator. Back on the file. Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Seeing none, the question is regarding Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 14. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 14 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, in the warm words of Representative Keith Wilford, I've never been this hungry. I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. What is your pleasure? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the
The Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Announcements. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number two appropriations will have a quick meeting at 12:30 in S-13 for some information that I want to distribute to you.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet up on adjournment tonight and take up Senate File 4, Livestock Disease Reporting Liability, Senate File 66, State-Funded Conservation Easement Restriction, Senate File 69, Omnibus Water Bill.
Senator Schiffer. Oh, no. Okay, sorry. Any other announcements? Senator Peterson.
Three Revenue will meet in 10 minutes up in rooms S-16 to take up Senate File 80, Senate File 68, and Senate File 21.
Further announcements?
Mr. President.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, tomorrow there's some folks looking at computers. They're going to want you to have your computers on the desk during lunchtime. So that for those of you that don't typically bring your computers, if you'd bring them tomorrow and it'd be helpful to staff.
Any further announcements? You've all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate in recess until 2 p.m.